This is a UC San Diego Blinkcast.
It's my pleasure today to welcome Dr. Santiago Horgan, who is the clinical professor from the Department of Surgery at the UC San Diego Medical Center. Dr. Horgan also is the director of the Center for Treatment of Obesity at UC San Diego, where he established the first program in San Diego to offer the new minimally invasive outpatient procedure called the lap band adjustable gastric banding system. Dr. Santiago Horgan is also the director of the minimally invasive surgery at UC San Diego Medical Center, and he's an internationally recognized expert in robot-assisted surgery and other minimally invasive surgical techniques. He's a pioneer in the surgical treatment of morbid obesity, as well as a specialist in surgery and the physiology of the esophagus. Please welcome Dr. Horgan.
Thank you for coming, and I'll try to be as short as I can. I was given a big challenge, two big topics, one obesity surgery, the other one scarless surgery, and I'm going to show you what that is all about and where UCSD is today and why UCSD is at the front of the country today in scarless surgery and many advancements in obesity. And there is no doubt that obesity is a very, very common disease. The U.S. is always number one, so it's the biggest obese country in the world, very closely followed by Mexico now, but we should continue improving and get away. It's not only obesity. I came here to the U.S. in 1990, and at that time, talking to patients about obesity was kind of a discrimination. You know, don't touch it, it's a touchy feeling. And through the years, we learned that it's a disease, and it's a disease that is killing a lot of patients. And it's also a disease that is creating other diseases, diabetes, high blood pressure, pain problems, pregnancy issues. And so we need to attack it. We have data since 1985, and I'm going to show you a quick jump of 25 slides, which will correlate with 25 years, for you to understand where we are in obesity in this country. So this was the data, and this is from the CDC, the Center for Disease Control in the U.S. This is data from 1985 showing that, you know, we were not very good at recording data obesity. Obesity was not an issue in 1985. Less than 10% were overweight. In some states, was 10 to 14. Not a big issue. And I'm going to run through 20 years, and I want you to look at the colors, how they're getting darker. So this was 86, 87, 88. 89, 90, 91, 92, 93, 94, 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, 2000, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Speechless. It's truly amazing, isn't it? It's truly amazing that we went from less than 10% or no data to most of the country over 20%, and half of the country over 30%. And I was joking through the presidential campaign, and I say, if I am McCain or Obama, I will not be talking about taxes, I will be talking about obesity, then I win the entire country. Anyway, we already have a president elected, so that's it. So having said that, this is not a disease that we are going to control with medical treatment. They're not. And if somebody is naive enough to believe that you can control this with diets, you need to go back to understand where the first diet was. And the first diet was in probably 20 before Christ. So we've been doing diets for a long time. And diets work. But what is the problem? Did I see chocolate cake back there? Brownies. So we're talking about obesity surgery, and we are eating brownies. And that is a chronic problem that we have. Not that there's anything wrong in eating brownies, but the reality is that we are attacked by food all the time. And diets work, but they work for a very short period of time, because if you are harassed by food every other second of your life, you give up. So this is just to give you a correlation. 1990, 1998, 2006. And we know where 7, 8, 9, 10 are going to be, right? They are going to be becoming darker and darker. Why are we obese or overweight? Well, there's not a doubt that there are three different factors, psychological factors. You are depressed, something happens, somebody dies in your family, you break up, you got divorced, you got fired from your job, etc. You eat. It's kind of the first thing to do. Then you look at yourself in the mirror, you don't look good, you eat more. You get depressed, you eat, and it's a vicious circle. You keep going and going. We may talk about your surroundings. You know, my wife tells me all the time is the genes. You know, my dad is a little bit overweight, and we women have more tendency to be overweight. And I say, well, that's not true. 50% of men are overweight, and 50% of women are overweight. There's no more obesity in one group over the other. Who goes to Costco here? Costco? I love Costco. I have no stock in Costco. But when you go to Costco on a weekend, who goes to Costco on the weekend? All these top areas where you eat and you eat. And I always lose my wife there. I turn around. And she's always behind some line. She tells me how well your body turns food into energy. She says, well, you know, you eat, and it's energy for you, and I eat. And of course, she's 110 pounds, 5'7". Okay? She's not overweight, but she works hard at it. And I said, well, you know, it's truly cultural. When we go to her parents' house or to my parents' house, or we go back to Argentina to visit, all we talk is about food. What's for lunch? What's for breakfast? What's for tea? What's for coffee? What's for dinner? It's always about food. There is no doubt that exercising habits play a role. I lived in Chicago for 8 years, and look where Chicago is, you know? Well, Illinois is a little bit off still, but it's surrounded by a lot of areas where you don't exercise much because of weather. And California has always traditionally been in the lower end of obesity in the country. It truly is an imbalance between what we eat and what we burn. That's what causes obesity. We have this feeling, and I always challenge every one of my patients, how many calories do you need a day? How many calories do we need a day? Well, 2,000 is if you exercise. And if you're like me, that I take the car to move two blocks, then you need less than 2,000, right? When I was in Chicago, the gym was three blocks away from my house, and I would take my car to go to the gym. So walking was 3 minutes. With the car was at least 15 if I got parking in the gym. And I use the car. It's very easy to bring food in, to bring calories in. A little McDonald's cheeseburger, the guys, how long it takes you to eat a cheeseburger? 600 calories. Now, it will take you probably 45 minutes of dancing with your wife, husband, partner. Now, you need to dance 45 minutes. When you're married, you don't dance 45 minutes anymore, right? In the dating phase, you may. But it takes a lot to burn them, very little to bring them in. There is discrepancy that we believe that size matters, you know, that the bigger the size, the more the calories. Well, probably those brownies are 300 or 400 calories, and they are like that. They are very tiny. This is a chocolate cookie from Argentina, filled of caramel, very good, two bites. Protocol is you take the first upper part with the chocolate and the caramel, and then you take the brownie part. Two bites only, 400 calories. So that's the problem. To make things worse, I call it cultural. I get to travel all over the world because I am in the big university. And I look at the coffee and croissant in Europe, and it's very tiny. I look at the coffee and croissant we have here in the U.S. And you just cannot compare them. Does anybody work for Starbucks here? Well, this is off the website, so please don't attack me. But look at what the cafe latte, which is truly, well, milk and coffee, 340 calories. And if you are wild and you go for a venti white chocolate mocha, you have 630 calories. But if you go for what it looks like a diet type of cake, non-added sugar, banana nut coffee cake, that's 500 calories. So you already have in a coffee and in a little cake 3/4 of your intake for the day. Now, Starbucks is very smart. It doesn't say no sugar. It says no added sugar. There's a lot that came with the banana, the nut, the coffee, and the cake. So truly, it's an issue about perception of reality and understanding why we are overweight. And at the end of the day, we are all overweight because we eat. When I came to this country 18 years ago, I was size 28. Now I'm 34 going to 36 and comfortable going up. So the diets, do they work? Well, we are in an academic setting, so we study things well. And we say, well, the chances of you doing well with the diet is around 6%. I said, that's tricky. Because the reality is that the success of a diet is 100%. If you don't eat, you lose weight. So diets do well. But the long-term outcome of the diet at 5 years is only 6%. And that's what we look at. And that's why, if you write diets and you create diets and you go back and you do research, you make money because you change the name or the last letter of the diet and you have a new diet, right? That leaves us with surgical options. And truly, if we are going to attack this disease, we need to operate people. This is not going to happen without the diet, with the diet. At UCSD, we are the only place in California that was approved to do a trial with kids. We have the only trial going on in adolescents, 14 to 17 years of age. You say, what do you mean? Yeah, we have 14-year-old kids that are 300 pounds that we have done surgery on. We do have some rules to engage a patient into surgery. We are not going to take everybody. I tell everybody a good program will only capture around 60 to 70% of the people that walk through the front door. We are going to challenge you if you come as a patient or somebody you know. If we are going to challenge that patient, make sure it's a candidate for surgery. We don't take everybody. We're going to look at the body mass index, which is the correlation between body weight and height, to look at the numbers. And then we are going to see if those patients qualify or not qualify for insurance approval or self-pay approvals. And this is, in general, what the companies are looking into. They say, well, if your BMI is between 30 and 40, then you need to have other diseases. If it's more than 40, then you qualify, which does not make a lot of sense because if your BMI is 39.9, then you don't qualify. So what do we tell the patients? Go back home and come back. So it's a double message, and I don't know where the truth is, but those are the engagement rules. We at UCSD, because we have a very solid program, we are academic, we have a lot of trials, we lower the bar, and we say, if your BMI is more than 30, then you may qualify for surgery. And why do we do that? Well, we have a lot of experience. We are proctoring everybody in San Diego. We're proctoring a lot of people in California, so we are the teachers of the surgeons doing surgery, which is, of course, the role of the university. That's why I came to UC San Diego. If the BMI is more than 55, we may tell the patient, you know, lab band surgery, this little ring that I'm going to show you in a minute, is not the best option. Let's move into something more aggressive. When we look at surgeries, and we are one of those programs that do every operation available, and we do the newest and the oldest, we do all of them. We have two groups, those that are restrictive, where we're going to limit how much you eat, and the other one that is a combined group. We're going to limit what you eat and limit how much you absorb. And we have all here about the stapling surgery or the gastric band surgery or the lab band surgery, and that's what this is all about. So the gastric bypass is an operation that works extremely well. It's very old, it has a good track record. We divide the stomach, and we bypass the stomach and the duodenum and a very long segment of small bowel. By doing that, we create malabsorption and restriction at the same time. The weight loss is very good. It's very fast. But there are some complications that we need to take into consideration. So when we balance them out, then we will choose which is the best option. It has a higher mortality rate than the lab band. It's around 0.5 to 3%, depending on who is doing the operation. But patients and families who are entering this type of surgery need to understand that there is a little price to pay. The gastric band system, there are two devices in the market, one made by Ethicon, called gastric band or realized band. The other one made by Allergan, called lap band. And we use both of them. It's a belt that we place around the stomach. And what we do is we limit how much you eat. And we create an hourglass where the upper part is very small and the lower part is the rest of your stomach. So we can tailor how much food goes through that ring. So we limit. You need to lose more weight, we make it tighter. We need to, you are okay, you have plateau, you don't want to lose any more weight, then we can make it larger. Has advantages. Of course, there's no malnutrition risk because whatever you eat, you absorb. But the weight loss is slower than with the gastric bypass. It takes a little more time. I would say an extra year to achieve the same results. The mortality rate is 0.05, so it's lower than the gastric bypass. But as you can see, both operations are equally good. They have ups and downs, and you get to choose which one you want. You need to come for follow-up for the gastric band surgery. That's the disadvantage. You need to really come and see us. You need to come for adjustment. But again, mortality is lower. This is a new kid in the block. The in-between surgery is called a sleeve gastrectomy. And what we do is we remove around 80% of the stomach. And we create a tube or a sleeve. That was called a sleeve gastrectomy. So we limit how much you eat without the need for adjustments. So you can mean we are going to have 5-year data next year. The data is very good so far, and I see that this operation is going to take over the gastric bypass. Has more mortality than the band, is non-reversible, and that's why there are differences with the band. We do have what we call a one-stop shop. Patients that come to this program were able to meld people in the same clinic, which is very difficult, to have surgeons working with internal medicine and psychologists. You know that surgeons have little ego. Not me. So what we do is we only ask you to come in, not you, but a patient to come in, and spend around 3 hours with us. And in that stop, that patient will be evaluated by medicine, psychologist, dietitian, patient counseling, nurse, fellows, and me. So you get a lot the same day. One of the things I learned from my 1,500 patients I did surgery on is that every patient that is overweight, usually they want surgery a year ago. So this idea of coming 5 times to make an appointment is too much. So we try to put everybody together in the same clinic. We do a lot of rules before surgery, regardless of which operation. We want to challenge the patients. I told you that earlier. We want to put patients on a liquid diet for at least 2 weeks. That will reduce the size of the liver. That will make the risk of bleeding lower. And of course, if the patient can do the 2 or 3 week liquid diet, they are ready for surgery. So we are challenging the system. Depending on what operation we do, it will take more or less time. Around the gastric bypass takes around 2 hours, the sleeve gastrectomy an hour and a half, and the band around an hour. That is from the time you go into the OR to the time you come out of the operating room. The gastric band, that I'm going to show later, is an operation that takes us half an hour, as I said earlier. Patients go home within 4 hours. And that's what we brought to San Diego 2.5 years ago when I came. Outpatient band surgery. That, of course, now has been copycat by many other programs, but that's okay. That's what the role of the university is. The sleeve gastrectomy takes around a day or two in the hospital, and the gastric bypass, in average, 2 days. There are complications from surgery. I'm going to go very fast. bleeding, gastric perforation, et cetera, that can happen. So nothing is free, and we're going to talk to the patients about them. And there are post-surgical complications, and they are different if you undergo a gastric bypass or you undergo a sleeve gastrectomy or you undergo a lap band. One of the most critical aspects of bariatric surgery is the follow-up, and you need to have a super good team to follow up. We are encountering a problem in patients going to Mexico that come back to the U.S. and that have no follow-up. And those patients save money in going into Mexico, but now they are losing money because they are coming here and they don't have a program that will adopt them. So that's something that we are trying to send a message out there. You know, saving one dime is not the most important thing, because truly the most important part of the surgery, it is the follow-up. It's critical. When it comes to the band, it needs to be adjusted with saline through a port. We follow this rule. If you're not losing weight, you come for a follow-up. If you're not restricted, you come for a follow-up. And if you're eating too much, you come for a follow-up. That's an adjustment. We will show that later. This is just to show when the adjustments are needed. And this is what I said earlier. If you follow these rules, you may lose 100 pounds a year, which is pretty good weight loss. Now, we put here that to achieve this, you need to do 50%. The first 50 is we need to select you, do the right operation, and follow you. But you play a very important role. Not you, the patient plays a very important role in the outcome of this operation, regardless of which one we are doing. This is my own data. This is when we compare the gastric bypasses I did with the bands I did. And when we look at the resolution of comorbidities, because at the end of the day, it's not about losing weight alone. It's about curing patients. And when we look at high blood pressure, diabetes, sleep apnea, GERD, osteoarthritis, the resolution rate is similar regardless of the operation we are doing. And that's why at UC San Diego, we are more biased into what we call reversible surgeries, because with the follow-up program we have, we do very, very well. This is Willie. Willie is a cook. He was one of the first patients with this surgery on here in San Diego. We did his operation in 2007. He was 339 pounds. In July of 2007 was the surgery. His weight today is 223. He lost 120 pounds in a year and a month. He continues being a cook. So when I get challenged by people saying, well, you know, I cook all the time and that's why I gain weight, well, Willie did gain weight cooking, but he also lost weight cooking. So if you want to do it, it's going to happen. And that's just to show how happy he is, right? He's a patient that never followed up. Came, 247, had surgery, lost some weight, and then disappeared. 3 years later, the weight was higher than what it was before. Here we do have a difference. If a patient wants to become pregnant, and many of the patients we operate are in the 30s to 40s, then the operation to do truly is the gastric band, because there's no malabsorption. And the babies, when they are born, they have normal weights. We do have rules at UC San Diego. If a patient does not lose weight, I'm going to cancel the surgery. The patient, between the day they come to clinic and the day of surgery, they should lose weight. And sometimes they say, well, you're too tough. I say, I prefer to be tough before we get in than after, once the patient underwent surgery. So I am on time. Well, that was a flyover obesity surgery. Any questions before we get into the future? Yes. Yes, the question is, does lap band surgery improves or cures diabetes? And And that's one of the slides I showed earlier, showing that if I compare the effectiveness of resolution between the gastric bypass and the band for diabetes, it's pretty much the same. One is a little bit faster. You know, the gastric bypass, you really cure diabetes in 2 days. You leave the hospital and it's gone. With the band, it's going to take probably 8 months to be gone, but it's going to be gone. So, you know, if it's type 2 diabetes, we are not seeing a big difference between gastric bypass or band when we look at the long-term follow-up. In the short term, yes, the gastric bypass is faster. Yes?
Yeah, you know,
the question is, if you have cardiac surgery, open cardiac surgery, can you undergo bariatric surgery? That's number one. And then the second question is, do patients regain weight after gastric band surgery? And what we are seeing today is that patients undergo gastric bypass, they do well initially, and when we look at the data at 5 years, many of those patients have regained weight. Why? Because you have no control. Once we do the operation, your body either responds to surgery or it doesn't. We surgeons have little control over it. With the gastric bypass, with the gastric band, it's just the opposite, because we can always make it tighter. So if you don't lose weight, it's because the patient is doing something wrong. Either he's cheating with the liquids, he's eating, you know, milkshakes, ice creams, cakes. And that's the reason, because if I make that band tight, then you don't eat anything. I mean, you throw up everything. So I will make you lose weight. So, you know, it depends on who's doing the operation. We do both, and I can assure you that they are equally good. You have more chances of regaining weight, I think, with a gastric bypass at 5 years. Now, regarding the second option, if you have cardiac surgery or you have a lot of heart disease, should you undergo the operation? And I tell my fellows when I teach them, at the universities, we bite the bullet. We grab the bull by the horn. We take everybody. Because if a patient has cardiac disease and is overweight, that patient very likely is going to die of a heart attack. So if we do surgery, that patient is going to improve. Of course, you need to have a good support, intensive care unit, good cardiologist. And if you have that and you have experience, you are going to challenge those patients and you're going to operate on those patients. Here at UC San Diego, it's very difficult for us to deny a patient because the risk is too high. We will take almost everybody. Yes?
What are the restrictions on the food and drinks? Not as far as the kind of greasy or sugar or this kind of thing, but that, not that the people with this kind of surgery cannot like drink any carbonated.
Well, the question is, can you drink carbonated beverages after bariatric surgery? And what I tell the patients all the time is, if you're undergoing surgery, it's because you ate too much for too long. So why don't we stop thinking about what you can eat? Let's think about how you lose weight. So that's the first thing we treat, you know, this addiction to food, where food is the center of your life. And you know, carbonated beverages, they don't do well with any of the operations because they tend to distend the stomach. And if you have a tiny stomach now, you can break the operation, you can start burping, etc. Some patients do have limitations. Some patients can drink vegetables, eat vegetables. Some patients cannot. Some patients can eat meat. Some patients cannot. This might be a trial and error with the patients. But again, the ultimate goal is to limit patients' intake of food. And that's what the operation is going to try to do.
So what other complementary services are available? Are there dietitians? Are there other types of support that help people after the surgery?
Very good question. The question is, do we have support after surgery? And at UC San Diego, we have a full support. We have a full-time dietitian, full-time psychologist, full-time patient advocate, full-time nurse, more than one physician doing the operation. We have three surgeons, so we have backup all the time. If one leaves the city, the other one is here. So, yeah, we have that luxury. But, you know, you don't have that everywhere, and that's why when you choose a bariatric program, you need to look into the big places. Not to say that UC San Diego is one of the best ones. It is the best one, but we have the best support. And the question is, what do I mean by minimal invasive? Well, we make tiny incisions. We don't cut open patients. We make, and I'm going to show later, usually we make 5 incisions. UC San Diego is the first in the city to do a single incision surgery. We only make 1 incision for bands. And we, for sleeves, we are going transvaginal with only 2 scars in the belly. And I'm going to show you that in a minute. So it's laparoscopic. We have pushed it a notch at UC San Diego by going with only 1 incision sometimes. We operate them too. The issue is, will insurance approve them or not? So if a patient is BMI 30 or higher and they qualify based on our criteria and our rigorous examination, we will take them, but you will have to pay for the operation. $16,500 for the lap band. The sleeve or the gastric bypass are in the 20,000 range. But that involves all the pre-op tests and 90 days of follow-up. So it's a pretty good balance. I mean, you come in and you do all the operation.
Yeah, I went to one of your seminars or classes a long time ago, and wanted to have it done.
Are we getting better?
Yeah.
Well, that changes all the time, so just give me your name later.
Okay.
The question was, he came in and he had issues with insurance, and should he stick with what insurance telling him, go somewhere else? And that is one of the problems we're running into now, you know, that the insurance is telling patients where to go, and at the end of the day, you should have the right to choose which physician you want to operate on you. Correct. So we are going to, just give me your name afterwards, and I will have one of my team nurses calling you. Okay?
I have the same problem. My doctor approved it. I got sleep apnea, hypertension, everything. And then I get to the insurance company, and they're like, well, no. You know, and my question was the same thing. You know, do we need to switch groups or plans or what have you?
There is another complaint about the insurance. Why isn't the insurance qualifying the patient back there? And the answer to that is, many times in your insurance form or process, you don't have bariatric surgery as one of the benefits. And if you don't have that, then there's not a chance they will qualify you. In other instances, the insurance is want you to have surgery with such a surgeon which they have contract with. So, you know, it varies. And it changes with time. So, you know, when I started doing these operations 9 years ago, nobody would get approved. And today, I would say that 50% of insurances are approving patients. So we have improved a lot. And we need to keep working as a group to give data to the insurance so they can process it there and then help us in approving patients. So the question was, will exercising affect the band surgery? And no, it doesn't. You can do pretty much what you want after a six-week period of time. But we have people, you know, water skiing, playing football, and doing things that are drastic. You can exercise, you can bike, you can run. There shouldn't be any problems. So the question is, do you eat less because you are less hungry or you're hungry? The gastric bypass, the sleeve, and the band, they all achieve the same goal. They remove the hunger, pretty much. So patients are less hungry. We always tell patients, you need to remind yourself to eat more or to drink water because you are going to forget about it because you are going to feel full all the time. So if the band is adjusted, you should feel full and hungry, and no hungry at all. The gastric bypass, you are going to feel always full if you don't have a pouch enlargement. And, you know. Yes?
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on your question. The band and everything else basically limits the amount of intake, right? What if your problem is, you mentioned earlier that people sometimes have psychological problems.
So the question is, what do you do if you have depression? How do you follow up? And the answer to that is, we have a psychologist team with us. So we try to treat the depression. But many times, the depression is because of the obesity. So the moment that we move the rock and we start losing weight, obesity starts to disappear. And if obesity disappears, the self-esteem starts to regain in your mood, and your depression goes away. There's a correlation of things. Okay, a couple more questions, and then I'm going to move into the next topic. Yes?
I'm curious if polycystic ovary syndrome is seen as one of those of the list of high blood pressure.
Correct, absolutely. The question is, polycystic ovarian syndrome disease, is this part of the comorbidities? Absolutely. Yes.
So the question again back to insurance requirements. So who determined that BMI has to be 35-40 versus lower? Was it a medical decision or was it the
rate? The question is why do we have limits for the insurance, 35-40 more than 40? And that's an excellent question. And that goes back to a consensus that was made in 1991 by the NIH. The National Institute of Health. But that's 1991. We are 17 years later using the same consensus. At that time, the band was not part of the consensus, and the sleeve gastrectomy was not part of the consensus. So the consensus is officially obsolete. Somebody from the NIH is hearing me, is obsolete. It needs to be updated. I believe, strongly believe, that the bar should be lower for gastric band than what it is for the gastric bypass, because it's an operation that is reversible, and it has less mortality. So, you know, I do believe that we should put rules, but we should update them at least every 10 years. Now it's 17 and nothing happens. Okay, last question. And the question is, what type of diet do you follow after lab band surgery? And the answer is very simple. In the first phase, which is a phase where we need to lose weight, you need to follow rules. Okay, and we are going to focus on that. Once you plateau, we are going to be more liberal on what you eat. we may open or not open the band. And most of the patients have a pretty good, comfortable diet. You can go to a restaurant, you can enjoy a meal. You are going to eat a lot less, but you can enjoy regular food. Okay. So something very, very new is called NOTES surgery. It's called scarless surgery, something new coming out there, something that we are taking the lead. UC San Diego is the number one place in the country in terms of experience. It's one of the tops in the world, and you will see the data in a minute. What is NOTES? Well, if we're trying to improve laparoscopic surgery, an operation where we make 5 or 6 incisions in the belly, we have two options. Option one is we do genetic surgery. We don't operate on people. We prevent surgeries. We are far away from that. Or we minimize the number of surgeries. We do single incision surgery, or even better, we have orifices. We have the mouth, we have the rectum, we have the vagina. Why don't we operate through that without pain? And that's what NOTES is. Why? Well, it has 3 goals. Goal number one is to reduce pain. Every time we make an incision in the abdomen, we have a chance of a hernia. So around 5%. We do 1 million cholecystectomies. We remove 1 million gallbladders a year in the US. 5% is 50,000 hernias. It becomes a number. And of course, here in California, where we are sunny and we have the beach and we enjoy the outdoors, the cosmetic plays a very important role too. If you guys here don't believe that there's a future, well, this was Thomas Watson, who was chairman of IBM in 1943, told us. He says, I think there is a world market for only about 5 computers. And we have 1, 2, 3, 4, we have 5 in one room right now. 3 back there, 2 more here. And I have the BlackBerry, which is another computer, and probably there are a couple of iPhones here, right? So that was a complete wrong statement. This is what it is. This is a drawing, and when I first saw this many years ago, I said, what are we talking about? You know, removing the stomach through the mouth with an endoscope. Who underwent an endoscopy here? Somebody or have a friend who have an endoscopy done, right? Well, we operate the same way, and I'm going to show you what we do. We have developed what we call the San Diego technique. We put a little trocar in the belly bottom, and then we operate through it at the mouth of the vagina, and that's how we remove organs. And this is just an inside view of this. We are moving the uterus up in this patient. And we are going through the posterior aspect. And we are removing, entering the abdomen through the cul-de-sac. Okay? And then once we are there, we are going to remove the gallbladder. And we are going to operate. If somebody doesn't want to see this, I'm going to go very, very fast. But you can see that we use an endoscope to operate. So we operate through the stomach or the vagina, and we pretty much, I'm going to show you a couple of seconds of this. This is how we endoscopically remove the gallbladder in this case. So it's a huge advancement, and I'm going to show you the outcome in a minute. We have treat obesity surgery. We were the first place in the country to remove the stomach in this patient through the vagina without the need to do a big incision in the belly to remove it. So this patient had the stomach removed, and you can see here how we go with the endoscope, and we can see pretty much everything with endoscopic surgery and divide the stomach as I showed you earlier. Okay, no more of that. Now, what is transgastric surgery? Well, we go through the stomach. We go through the mouth, and we remove the appendix. And this is just to show you quickly, as in this patient, removing the appendix through the mouth. And this was on national TV. This was on Time magazine, so we can show this in here. You can see the appendix getting inside the stomach and then coming out of the mouth of this patient there, with the only scar being a 2-millimeter incision in the abdomen. So this is the future of scarless surgery, and I can assure you it's here to stay. So what are the results? Because it's always good to show how many patients. Well, we have done 45 patients right now, so this is becoming a big number in the US. The second to follow UC San Diego has 4 patients. So clearly, we are way ahead of the league in the country. We have done removal of the appendix through the mouth or the vagina. We have removed the gallbladder through the mouth. We have examined the abdomen. We have removed the gallbladder through the vagina in many patients. And of course, we have removed the stomach and we have treated hernias. Interesting is that we were challenged at the beginning saying, well, if you go through the vagina, do you create infertility? And we have experts in OBGYN in fertility working with us. And now we are seeing what they told us from the very first day. It does not happen. Patients have no issue with pregnancies after transvaginal surgery. We have now 1 patient that had a baby, and we actually have 2 patients that are pregnant as we speak today. This is the outcome, and this patient allowed me to show this here, so that's why I'm showing her face. But this patient came from Chicago to have the operation. She had the gallbladder removed, and you cannot see the scar, because the incision in the belly button was only 2 millimeters inside. Who watches the doctors? There's a show called The Doctors, and UC San Diego was in The Doctors because one of our patients was follow-up before, during, and after, and she was very happy. This is the patient that you saw where the appendix came out of the mouth earlier. Now, we are now doing what we call single incision surgery, where we make a tiny incision to remove the gallbladder. And I'm just going to show the outcome of that. So this patient had the entire gallbladder, I'm not showing anything, had the entire gallbladder removed through the belly button in what we call also scarless surgery or single incision surgery, no scars at the level of the belly button. So we are pushing it. Either we make no scars at all, or we make a bigger scar at the belly button. The patient gets to choose. But this is what the future of surgery is happening. It's unfair that UC San Diego is not the future, it's the present, but we are in the campus and we should talk about the present for us. But this is where it's going. Surgery is trying to minimize pain, reduce complications, and improve cosmesis, and I think that's very, very good. I told you we talk about the band, and we are not going to show the operation, but just to show you that this patient underwent surgery, and that's all she has after the operation. It's an 1.5-inch scar where the port goes, and all the operation was run through that same incision. Before, we had this plus 4 more. Today, with new technology, we're only doing that tiny, tiny incision. Now, what is coming? Well, the endoscopic gastric bypass is what's coming, and we are doing a lot of research in this area. This is just to show a graphic of what this is. And this is a patient that we did surgery on, did very well. I'm not going to show the details of this patient, but this is what the operation is. Instead of dividing and cutting the stomach, we place a sleeve through the mouth that will bypass the food from being absorbed. And that sleeve is being deployed with water pressure, and that capsule flies and bypasses the stomach, the duodenum, the small bowel, so the food goes from the from the mouth into this sleeve, bypassing everything. So it's an endoscopic bypass. This is the first worldwide endoscopic gastric bypass ever made, and UC San Diego is the player in this type of surgery. So this is where we are going today. We are becoming, and I'm not going to show that, we are becoming less invasive. I don't know if you guys have you guys seen this? So because of all the leadership that UCSD is taking, we have been future in many, many journals. We were future in Time Magazine, Newsweek, Business Week, but lately we were future in Jay Leno. And I'm going to put this in here so you guys can hear it.
And what's being called a medical miracle. Doctors at the University of California in San Diego have successfully removed a man's appendix through his mouth. Took his appendix out through his mouth. I don't know if this means you have a really good doctor or a really bad HMO.
We believe you have a good doctor. Thank you very much.
This has been a UC San Diego Blinkcast. For more, visit us online at blinkcast.ucsd.edu.